The Stinky Sock and the State by Ben Stone. Who doesn't know this story? The baseball player is in a hurry getting ready for a game and ends up wearing one clean sock and one dirty sock. He goes out on the field and he has the best game ever. He's convinced it's the luck of that stinky sock. He never washes that sock again, and he wears it in every game until it falls apart. Then he saves a chunk of it and keeps it in his pocket. This story is played out in the sports world every day with thousands of different objects and thousands of athletes. Never mind that it's entirely a silly superstition that an object could be lucky. Never mind that every athlete has good days and bad days. And never mind that if there was luck, it could have been the clean sock that was magic just as easy as it was the stinky one. And never mind having the slightest bit of objective analysis. He believes the magic stinky sock of luck. What happened with the sock is often played out in a different way in the mainstream media. Some expert with an impressive title from some distinguished university gets a grant to study a topic. For the sake of this article, let's say Bill Smith, PhD, believes you must be half deaf to enjoy heavy metal music. So Smith interviews 100 fans of heavy metal music at a concert. Smith is careful to divide his study group into different categories: male, female, smokers, non-smokers, under 30, under 20, full-time employed, part-time employed, unemployed, never employed, etc. In the process of eating up his grant money, he finds that 100% of the concert goers show some degree of hearing loss at the end of the concert. Smith's conclusion: people with hearing loss have a greater chance of becoming fans of heavy metal music than the general public. Clearly, Smith's conclusion is based not on logic, but on the results Smith wanted to draw from the beginning of the study. He ignores the possibility that the concert may have caused the hearing damage. Of course, you see Smith's flaw because I've used an obvious example, but a variation of this fallacy shows up in headlines with disturbing regularity. And now for something completely different. Mankind has made some amazing leaps in technology, resulting in vast changes in the way we live. Without compiling pages and pages of subjective analysis along with supporting research, let me state that no person living today can fully appreciate the impact that the development of the control of fire had on humans. Some researchers have come a long way in understanding its impact, but without actually living in such a world, it's impossible to fully imagine life in those days. But someone, some individual person, figured out how to control fire. This accomplishment, along with the development of the hammer, blade, and the lever, allowed humans to leap from being the hunted to being the hunter, and from being the gatherer to being the planter. Every discovery or invention that individuals have made since that time pales in comparison to this group of technologies. With time, individual people use their new toys to develop farming, metal crafting skills, and vast improvements in living standards were achieved. We're told that roughly 10,000 years ago, people were enjoying such luxuries as villages, farms, beer, religion, written communications, money, jewelry, beasts of burden, wagons, and a variety of textiles. Life was, relatively speaking, good. One thing humans didn't have in those days was the walled city. The first city walls that we know of were those of the proto-city-state Jericho. This development is the single strongest indicator of the birth of the state some 9,000 years ago. This tiny infant of the beast was not noticeable to the bulk of humanity at the time. Most people went about their business the same as they had for eons: fishing, hunting, farming, trading, and living their lives, never knowing that a small pocket of their species was enslaved by a selfish entity obsessed with the blood sport of war and the consumption of taxes. And as far as we know, the next city-state didn't develop for another 3,000 years, but when it did, it quickly morphed into the first empire. The beast tried on his big boy pants, stomped around the yard for the very first time, plucking the wings off of weaker beasts while burning and torturing his subjects for sport. City-states and empires came and went, but never threatened humanity with anything other than localized tyranny and till about 300 years ago, when Europeans began to press their technological advantages into the service of the state. With stunning speed, the beast spread its wings and engulfed continent after continent with its bloodlust. In the last century, it became almost impossible to find a remnant of free humans living without the burden of tax and the stench of war. During those 300 years, a parallel event took place. Surges and sags in the population aside, the sheer number of people alive at the same time, in combination with the uniquely human tendency to tinker and invent, caused an explosion of thought, technologies, inventions, and scientific discovery. Thus, we have the myth of the stinky sock. Often, the uninformed and self-imprisoned masses confuse the one event as being the catalyst to the other. The stinky sock did not the champion create. The champion created the myth of the stinky sock. The same goes for the state and the current level of technological achievement. Often I've heard people espouse nonsense about the state providing incentive for technologies to develop. Or worse, I've actually heard people credit war with economic development or even with scientific accomplishments, as if the destruction of goods and slaughter of humanity could produce wealth and positive advances. The same people who acknowledge the failure of the government postal system or admit the wholesale repression of individual achievement by government schools somehow leap to their feet in praise of the state's magical ability to inspire invention. All evidence to the contrary is ignored as the willing blind cling to their hideous master, never considering that it could just be that the beast may have actually held society back rather than advanced it. To the ballplayer, had he discarded his silly myth and practiced harder, not only would he be a better athlete, but a better smelling one as well. And so it is for humanity. When we finally discard this smelly creature and give up the foolish myths it harbors, we can begin to become civilized and achieve what we're capable of becoming. Just a few examples of the state hindering invention. You've been lied to about these. James Watt improves the steam engine with a small device. The state grants him a monopolized protection, and he spends the rest of his life and his fortune preventing anyone else from improving the steam engine. Progress on this one technology is held back for an entire generation. Cotton gins are as old as history itself, but Eli Whitney overhears someone's idea of an improvement to a device, and he uses the force of the state to grab a monopoly on its production, slowing the anti-slavery movement by artificially maintaining the profitability of the large plantations of the antebellum era. Orville and Wilbur Wright, using their family's vast political influence and their daddy's gaggle of lawyers, sew up a monopoly on the production of aircraft in the United States. This, in turn, stops all innovation of the newborn technology in the Western Hemisphere. 15 years go by while the Wrights utilize the force of the state to control their dwindling market. Europeans, free to innovate, push the technology ahead. Upon entry of the U.S. into World War I, Americans can't field a single aircraft of modern design and are forced to purchase their aircraft from the French and the English. During the 1920s and early 1930s, individual inventors around the world take the first steps to bring us into the rocket age. At roughly the same time, other individuals begin developing the vacuum tube and with it the first true computers, while others still seek answers to the mysteries of the atom. The various nation states look at these three developing technologies and see a tool of destruction. All free market innovation is squashed, and the beast wraps one of its slimy tentacles around the collar of science. Some of the best minds of their age are crippled with the burden of facilitating mass murder like the world has never known. computer technology is held back for 35 years before free tinkering individuals in their mother's garage in Sunnyvale, California, give us what the state has tried desperately to keep to itself. Meanwhile, a handful of entrepreneurs are still struggling with the state to bring a free market to space travel. And still, after nearly 70 years, the beast has such a mighty grip on the energy market that we can incinerate an entire city. But cheap, safe atomic power is still just a dream. Therefore, I conclude, for the free-thinking, logical individual, the state has all the appeal of a stinky sock, and the faster it and the mythology surrounding it are rejected by civil society, the faster society can move ahead to a brighter, more prosperous future.